This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Adam!
Bah, ha, 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 ha.
Travis?
Bo-ho-ho.
I knew Christmas was coming. I knew that's what it was. Christmas in May.
Merry Friedlander.
Merry Christmas.
Bo, have I got a story for you. It's like an enigma wrapped in a question, whatever. It has to do with a browser wrapped in a browser that could be the cause of misery in your life. Travis, you know about this.
That's right. It's called a browser in the browser attack.
Ah, the online turducken of identity criminality.
Right, and this one's pretty sneaky, because even with anti-phishing training, this is a tactic or a method that can get around a lot of the telltale signs of a phishing attack.
You know, when you say a phishing attack, I think a link that I get via email or perhaps texted to me. And what does that have to do with a browser?
Well, what this does is you get emailed a link, and then that link will lead you to a cloned page that'll look exactly like a service that you use. And it takes advantage of the fact that a lot of people these days, rather than using password managers or keeping track of all their passwords, are using something called single sign-ons.
Wait a second. Now, a service, when you say service, the single sign-ons are few and far between. They're like Google, Facebook,
Microsoft.
Who else does Microsoft, right. But it's big, big portals, big companies that are providing the authentication for you so you don't have to fill out all those forms. Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. You can just use one password that you know to your primary account rather than having to create a separate account for every single service you use online.
Sounds like a potential, what's the word? Cluster?
Cluster flum, 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 flum.
Cluster fuffle? Okay.
Yeah.
A kerfluffle.
It cluster. Sounds potentially really messy.
Right.
Cluster fun. That's it. Cluster
there we go.
Fun.
So with these clone pages, first of all, one thing that you can often see with a cloned page is if you mouse over a link, the link will be something different. With these attacks, if you mouse over the link to, say, sign into Google, it will actually show you that it's supposed to be leading to the regular Google login form.
Let's say that in simpler terms, Travis. It will actually show you the URL for Google.
Right. It'll show you the URL for Google.
Gotcha. How do they do that?
It's pretty easy. You can just have that. You can add a little bit of script onto the page that just says, ignore the links and ignore the link destination. Instead, open a pop-up window.
Oh, so just as you would do to open up like adamlevin.com as a pop-up.
Right. Exactly. And so what this does is it opens, it doesn't actually open a pop-up window, but it looks exactly like a pop-up window asking you for your login and your password.
So it's an overlay or it's inside the browser?
It's inside the browser, but it's an overlay on top of the content.
So it's like fits exactly to the window.
Exactly. Right.
Can you move it?
Yeah, you can move it. You can close it. You can do all the same things that you would do with a standard pop-up window. So it looks exactly like one. But in this case, it's actually a cleverly disguised script meant to capture your credentials.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, but I have another question about this. It's a window. Mm-hmm. So if you're operating the Chrome browser or the Firefox browser,
right,
and you have multiple tabs open, mm-hmm, this phishing link is going to pop up a new window. So that's one tell.
Yeah, it would not show up as a new tab. So it looks like
Correct.
It's just a pop-up window.
So if you're used to seeing things, if you have your computer set mm-hmm to just open a new tab mm-hmm as a default, this is going to give you a quick tell. If you're paying attention.
If you're paying attention.
If you're paying attention, you will notice, oh, there's a new window. That's not supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. And
but if you don't see the black cat in the Matrix,
right,
and it doesn't glitch, what happens next?
Well, if you one of the things that makes it tricky to identify is that you can actually drag the window around on your screen.
Yeah, it's a window. I get it.
Right. But you can't drag it outside of your browser window. So that is the one tell.
Well, why not?
Because it's actually, it's not a new window as such. It's just a pop-up within your browser.
Oh, so it's not a window. It is actually a pop-up that looks like a window.
I'm moving the window around right now.
And it goes off screen. Off screen. So I know you guys are legit, but if you guys weren't legit and it was time to quit, you'd get stuck in there because you'd be a pop-up.
And we just feel like shite.
Exactly.
That didn't rhyme.
It would in England. But
it would have. We didn't want to get a beep.
I've been watching Anatomy of a Scandal. Come on, I get it.
Too legit to shite.
Shite.
At any rate, the main thing about it is it gets around a lot of the telltale signs of a phishing or a clone site. And in so doing, if you really want to take it to the next level, it can read whatever operating system or browser you're using and make it look like that window, which makes it even harder to detect.
Ooh. So it really can, it actually in the, when it's served the request for the page or the pop-up in this instance, it's actually seeing everything. It's got your IP address, it sees what operating system you're using,
right,
and serves it accordingly.
So to quote a former president, that might be somewhat part of the story that we're about to tell later on, this is a bad hombre.
And he's not talking about a blonde to brown hair dye job.
Welcome to What the Hack, a show about hackers, scammers, and the people they go after. I'm Adam, cyberstorian.
I'm Bo, cyber neo-Marxist interested in a good story.
And I'm Travis, cybrarian.
Cybrarian, eh?
Yeah.
And today on the show, Brian Ebert is back, ladies and gentlemen. And he's going to tell us a story about the Secret Service's response to 2017 cyber attack on the presidential inauguration.
I just got back from France, and there was a lot of stuff I couldn't stream because I was in the wrong region. But using NordVPN, I was able to stream everything.
I use NordVPN too, but it's more to protect my private data, like bank details, passwords, and online identity. There are a million trackers online that are just sort of watching you, and NordVPN is a great way to get around those.
NordVPN can switch your virtual location, allowing you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price.
If you're traveling and you're using public Wi-Fi, NordVPN can protect you wherever you are.
It's not just that. NordVPN also comes with threat protection, which helps protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites.
NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, and it'll only set you back the price of a cup of coffee a month.
To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/WTHack.
And hey, there's no risk. It's a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Check the link in the podcast description.
So Bo and Adam, you guys know I'm a bit of a privacy geek, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, totally. I really just don't like the idea that just about anyone can find you online, can find out where you live or your email address or your phone number or anything. I just think that entire idea is super creepy.
There's so much of my data already out there, but is there something that you can do?
Yeah, actually, you can use Delete Me. Delete Me is a service that pretty much does the heavy lifting for you, where they go to all the data brokers that they have on file and just pull your data and delete it on a regular basis.
I use it. I like it. And they make it quick, easy, and safe to remove your personal data online.
Well, yeah, with these data brokers, they can accumulate huge amounts of your personally identifiable information. And if all that information gets into the hands of a bad actor, that opens you up to a lot of risk.
And if you act now, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and use promo code WTH. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and enter promo code WTH at checkout.
That's joindeleteme.com/WTH, promo code WTH, which stands for What the Hack. and we thank you for supporting Delete Me and What The Hack. We'd like to welcome Brian Ebert back to our show. Brian was the former chief of staff of the United States Secret Service. He was also a special agent in charge of the Washington Field Office, among other titles that he has. He's now the chief strategy officer for a company called Hackers Jack out of Virginia. And Brian has some fascinating stories to tell. In fact, we did a previous episode with Brian that I know you'll enjoy listening to that had to do with taking down an international credit card ring. But today we've got a lot of new and interesting stuff to talk to Brian about. So Brian, tell us a little bit about you that I haven't already told them about you.
Well, thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me back on the show. Bo, Travis, great to be back with you.
Welcome back.
Great to have you.
As you said, I worked for the Secret Service for almost 30 years. Obviously, started in my my mid-teens to make that happen. And
when you were 10, actually.
And, you know, the Secret Service has a dual mission of protecting our nation's leaders and in protecting the integrity of the financial infrastructure of our country. So I had the good fortune throughout my career to bounce back and forth between those two parts of our missionary and worked in field offices, working criminal investigations. Secret Service is a small agency, so we all wear a lot of hats, so everything from investigations to surveillances to making arrests, everything in between, and then bouncing between that investigative mission and our protective mission, both through our support we provide in our field offices and being assigned to a protective detail. I was assigned to the vice president's detail for Vice President Gore and Vice President Cheney back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And just sort of jumped around to a bunch of different offices. I started in Los Angeles, spent some time in New York, did a number of assignments in Washington, D.C. And it was just never a dull moment and really good opportunity to work with a lot of different people from various walks of life and to see the world and learn quite a bit.
And Brian, you were also involved in cybersecurity too, correct?
Yes, Secret Service and both sides of our mission is very much engaged in cybersecurity. And the protective side of our mission, we are focused on keeping the environments that our protectees are going to go into safe. So we're very much concerned about the nexus between the internet and cyber and with the physical world. So we look really hard when the president or another protectee is going to a new site. We look at access to the elevator controls. We look at air intake controls. We look at locking systems. We look at cameras. Anything that a bad guy from the outside could access that could be a threat to security. We take a really hard look at that. And in our investigative mission, our mission has morphed since 1865, when we were first charged with protecting our nation's currency from counterfeiters. Up through modern day, where primarily we're focused on financial crimes that use the internet or cyber as a platform for them being committed. So that's really where our focus is on, is cyber-enabled financial crimes.
One thing that I think has been the case for a lot of law enforcement agencies just across the world is that they're a little bit late to the party when it came to cybersecurity. When did that become a focus for the Secret Service?
I would say, perhaps immodestly, that we were pretty early to the table. Mm-hmm. We were charged with fraud investigations, access device fraud, credit card fraud, cell phone cloning, other types of cell phone fraud, pretty early on in the 80s. And in the early mid 90s, I would say 94, 95, we created our, at the time, today, they're known as cyber fraud task forces, CFTFs, but at the time they were known as electronic crimes task forces, where we bring together all different types of federal, state, and local law enforcement, but also the private sector, specifically the bank and finance sector, as well as academia, to kind of come together look at fraud trends, what's going on, and coming up with solutions to help us investigate those sort of crimes and to track down and catch the bad guys, seize the assets, and see justice done. So we've been involved with that for a long time. A lot of other agencies are also involved, such as the FBI and such as ICE, Homeland Security Investigations, and certainly state and local law enforcement. But we all work together. We sit on their task forces. They sit on our task forces. But if the focus is financial crimes that are cyber enabled, then generally the Secret Service has the lead for those type of cases.
And I'm wondering, what do you see as the biggest current threat out there when it comes to cybercrime?
The agencies continue to reprioritize our resources based on the evolving techniques that the cyber criminals are using. And right now, the agency is seeing a lot of use of digital currency to either move money around or for money laundering purposes or for illegal deals or to cash out money from criminal activity that was primarily cyber in nature. So I know the Secret Service, I'm retired a few months now, but I know they've recently opened a public-facing cyber currency awareness site to educate the community and provide a forum for reporting potentially illegal activities, and very much focused on going after following the money, going after the money so we can seize it and get it back to the victims whenever possible. That's been the focus, as we've seen a huge increase in transnational organized crime cases that are using these digital currencies.
So, Brian, speaking of evolving threats, you have a pretty high-level story for us today that happened in 2017, I believe.
Yes, it was not far before the 2017 presidential inauguration.
America has a new president. Overnight, we saw Donald Trump occupying his new office, the Oval Office. We also saw him in First Lady.
Presidential inaugurations are designated as National Special Security Events, or NSSEs. It just means they're large events of national significance. Other examples are like the United Nations General Assembly in New York, World Leader Summits, political conventions like the RNC and DNC. These events are led federally by the Secret Service, the FBI, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. Secret Service is responsible as the lead agency for planning, coordinating, implementing the comprehensive security plan. FBI covers intelligence and incident management, and FEMA is consequence management or incident recovery if something bad happens. At the time, I was the special agent in charge of our Washington field office, as you mentioned before, and we had the operational lead for working with all the partners to plan and coordinate the plan for the inauguration.
I have a dumb question about the inauguration, Brian, that I think maybe our listeners may have a similar question. The line of succession, how does it work when you have everybody who's anybody who could possibly be president there?
For events such as the inauguration or presidential addresses to a joint session of Congress, there's always someone that is in the line of succession that does not attend.
A designated survivor.
Yes. And that person may or may not receive Secret Service protection during other circumstances. But during those times, the Secret Service joins up with whoever it provides protection to those folks.
Roger.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Roger, I'm sorry you drew the short straw on this.
No,
we'll miss you tonight. Next year, it'll be the Surgeon General, I promise. Meanwhile, you can watch on TV in my study.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, it still bothers me that the head of agriculture would be the president just because. But there you have it.
I would suggest that agriculture is pretty important to the country, so.
No, hey. I agree with you 100%, and I didn't mean hey. No pun intended.
Sure.
Just remember, Kiefer was head of housing and urban development.
Mr. Secretary, you need to put the phone down.
Mike, what the hell is going on?
I said put the phone
Ma'am,
down.
Your phone.
Okay, we've lost contact with the Capitol. We're searching the places.
Some kind of explosion in or around the Capitol building.
We are still walking to fall.
I've heard of the show. I can't say that I've seen it, but I understand that that's what the show's about.
I've always just wondered about that. When everyone's there, who's gonna take over if anything were to happen?
And the big question is, how does that person get picked?
I'm not gonna get into the specifics of that.
That's probably a little bit too far into the kitchen. We're gonna have to go back into the dining room.
So for these inaugurations are many months of planning, coordinating, coming up with the plan, training, doing exercises to prepare for these 3 days of events. Because it's not just the inauguration, it's the events that usually start the day before and go into the following day of the actual inauguration, the parade, the balls, and all the formal events, and then the prayer event at the National Cathedral the following day. So, and all these different agencies, they're bringing manpower, they're bringing all sorts of resources to support this integrated plan. And so 8 days before the inauguration events began, we found out from our friends at the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department that dozens of their permanently installed security cameras in the vicinity of the inauguration had been compromised.
No.
Uh-oh.
Over 100 cameras.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric e-bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every Electric e-bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the Electric e-bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means you get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance an Electric e-bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with Electric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com. And please mention that What the Heck with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's electricebikes.com. That sounds to me like, I mean, so the first thought has to be that there's something extremely serious afoot.
We were very concerned that the bad actors could have access to these cameras, which were part of the plan. They were some of the most important images that we wanted of the parade route and other events around the inauguration. And we were also concerned that they could have access and disrupt our security plan.
Now, when you find something like that out, Brian, does that elevate your threat level? Does it create a situation where does the president-elect find out about this, or are you still just in planning mode and trying to make sure all your ducks are in a row?
It lit a fire underneath us for sure, and we got our agents from our cyber fraud task force, which includes members of the DC Police Department, over to where these computers that supported the camera system were. And we worked with the city's Office of Chief Technology, and the team was able to see that there was a ransomware attack that had taken control of the camera system, demanding a large sum of money to be paid via Bitcoin to the hackers in return for access back into the system.
This is where the ominous music in the movie would start to play right about now.
Do you know how the police actually discovered the breach?
There was a splash page that came up that gave the demands of the that made it clear that hackers had used ransomware to take control of the system, and were asking for it was more than $60,000 among the different computers involved to get access back into the system. So
this was not a case where somebody stumbled onto this, like, hey, this camera's not working, why is that? To where it flat out showed up on a screen going, pay us or else.
That's true. We didn't know. We certainly assumed it was intentional and intentionally focused on these computer systems, because what else? That's what our job is to make those sort of assumptions. And now we've had this ransomware attack. But at the time, our goal was to regain control of the camera system before the inauguration and catch the criminals involved. And it goes without saying, we weren't going to pay a ransom.
Now, is there a thought at this point, Brian, that the ransom demand was actually a cover for something else happening, and that there was a higher threat level than just a garden variety ransomware attack?
We didn't know what it could mean. We thought about every potentiality that it could mean, and prepared ourselves accordingly. So this was a great example of why the two sides of the Secret Service mission are with this one agency of these criminal investigations, and and our protective mission, because immediately both sides of our mission areas, you know, had to go into action to deal with this. Our technical experts were able to image the hard drives that powered the cameras, and pretty quickly with the city's technology folks, they were able to reconfigure the server so the criminals were locked out and clear from the system, and returned all control to the police department and the Secret Service so they could be used to support security operations for the inauguration.
So Brian, quick question. So was this a software issue? Someone failed to update something? Or was this just somebody being able to sort of get in?
I don't remember all the details. I mean, it was, to be honest, we were focused on two things: making sure these didn't negatively impact the security plan for the inauguration and any of our people that we protect, to include, in this case, all the general public that come out for these things. And then number two, to catch the bad guys. So we weren't so much focused, that was kind of more for the city of chief technology to kind of go back in and figure out how it could have been allowed to happen. And we definitely kept abreast of that. But once we know that they were out and that we had control, we were 100% focused on the attribution front.
Look, no fingers are being pointed at the police department, the Secret Service, Capitol Police. I mean, here's the thing. You've seen those t-shirts with, you know, it happens. Well, unupdated software happens too. And it doesn't matter what walk of life you're from. But it's a common way for people to get hacked.
Misconfigurations, failure to update software, all those kinds of things. It's just part of who we are and what we do as a human race.
Now, we've all seen the spy movies where people are hacking into municipal cameras to see, you know, commit a crime or to stop someone from seeing a crime being committed. So you would think that those things would be updated, but you also could totally understand how they might not be. And it's really super common. To just give one example that I don't know if we want to use or not, Andrew, but to give just one example, there was a recent very serious incident in New York City in the subways, and all three of the cameras in the station where it occurred failed. They weren't working. It's just a common thing in a giant municipality with tens of thousands of cameras for things like that to happen. That said, you know, there's so many pieces to this story.
So where do you go from here?
One of our forensic examiners spent a lot of time with the ransomware called a splash page message. Realized that the image was actually from a desktop screenshot. And he realized there were other windows open behind the primary screen, and blowing up the images, Hay was able to view part of the content.
Enhance.
And specifically, he was able to view a delivery company's tracking number that investigation revealed came back to an address in London.
So So as a result, the hackers made a big mistake that you were able to capitalize on.
A mistake was made, for sure. And because of the fact that the presidential inauguration was only a few days out, working with all our US and UK partners, we were able to get a search warrant for the address in London within a few days, which is unprecedented, in my opinion. For an international warrant like that to get issued that quickly, I'd never seen anything like it. Only because it was the presidential inauguration, was able to move so quickly. But here's where it gets really interesting. The UK's National Crime Agency and Secret Service agents from our London office, they served the warrant on the London address, seized the computers, and interviewed the occupant of the residence. They quickly learned that the subject didn't appear to know anything about ransomware or the inauguration and seemed believable, but a search of the computers revealed that the London resident had been the victim of another type of cybercrime. It's a scam where bad guys open up a real account as a vendor within Amazon for completely fraudulent purposes. As you know, Amazon sells items directly, but also serves as a marketplace for vendors to sell products through the Amazon site.
Right.
Once the vendor account is open, the bad guys will advertise for products that will show up when customers conduct Amazon searches for a particular product. In this case, the customer, the London resident, conducted a search for a smoking gun. I kid you not, this is a food preparation product designed to quickly give foods and cocktails a smoked woodsy flavor, I guess.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I mean, I visualize this go, but wait, I just wanted a smoking gun.
It's and you like, thought you had found the smoking gun.
It's like.
It was our smoking gun. The London resident ended up on the fraudster's Amazon site, entered all their credit card and other information necessarily to purchase the item. But the bad guys don't steal the provided account information because the customer would quickly realize that the point of compromise had been the Amazon vendor, and they would notify Amazon, who would in turn shut down the vendor site, which is very time consuming to set up for the bad guys. So what they do is they use stolen credit card numbers, likely bought off the dark web, and then buy the item, the smoking gun, from another vendor and send the item to the customer so they don't know that a fraud has been committed.
Wow. Travis looks like he's watching a steak being cooked by the best chef on earth.
A little bit.
Let's run that one just one more time, just so I can grasp it. Okay, so you have a fake vendor site, and you have guys who are, they're looking for, what are they looking for? Stolen credit card numbers? They're looking for addresses, information, what?
So the bad guys have stolen credit card numbers from another source.
Right.
So they're looking for a way to get cash out of the deal.
So money laundering.
To cash out. Well, it's a type of money laundering, but it's also the cash out. It's getting the cash out of the illegal activity. So they set up the vendor site and they'll put all sorts of stuff on it, so it gets hit when people are looking for something. And they'll put stuff on there that they know that they can easily get other places. When the legitimate customer gives their credit card information, the bad guys take that information and buy the product from another legitimate site.
Okay. Now, how does this end up? Heavens to Murgatroyd. How do we go from smoking gun to gun that provides smoke to to cameras getting hacked in Washington, D.C.?
It's a little complicated, I realize. It's very insidious, these steps that the criminals set up so that they can do this scam over and over again through Amazon, and the Amazon customer never knows that there's been a fraud committed because they get what they ordered, and their credit card is hit for the amount.
What's the reason? What do they get out of it? How does this allow them to commit a ransomware attack in D.C.?
Our investigators were able to follow the digital trail to Romania, and with a lot of good investigative work that both in the physical and the cyber, they were able to identify the suspects. And that learned that these bad guys were doing the Amazon vendor fraud, but they were also using what we call ransomware as a service. So they weren't super high speed hackers that developed ransomware. They went on the dark web and bought it. At the time it was Cerber and Dharma are the ransomware that they bought. And it came with an instruction book and they just sent it out. And it turns out all evidence suggests that they didn't know that the servers supporting the police cameras were police cameras and, you know, involved in the presidential inauguration security plan. They likely didn't know that.
So Brian, you had 8 days to go from this hack to getting it solved and getting those cameras back online and making sure all the other cameras were okay. And that all happened in an 8 day period?
I can tell you what didn't happen in the 8 day period was much sleep for anybody working on this. I mean, it was,
I bet.
This case is all about partnerships, and it's what makes these sort of investigations and agencies like the Secret Service successful is the strengths of these partnerships. If we didn't have an incredibly strong partnership with the Metropolitan Police Department before this happened, there's no way it would have moved as quick as we did, because we knew them so well. They sat on our task forces. You know, I met with the chief regularly, and we worked together closely on this inauguration because it's their city, you know, and so we're partners in this. If those relationships weren't as strong as they were, there's no way we'd have been able to move this quickly, because within a couple of days, we were able to get the bad guys off and make sure that they're clear, wipe them, reload the software, and have a high, you know, degree of confidence that those cameras were ours and that the bad guys didn't have any access to them anymore. And then we were able to focus on, obviously that was the first priority, and then the attribution part.
One thing that's standing out to me here is that if this was in 2017 and it was part of a ransomware as a service attack, that seems like it was pretty early in on the whole phase of ransomware hitting that. I think ransomware as a service became a lot better known after the Colonial Pipeline, for instance, attack and things like that. Were ransomware as a service syndicates very much on your radar in that era? Was it still just sort of regarded as being kind of like a nuisance hack?
I can tell you that they were certainly in their infancy in terms of those bulk blasts out that people who didn't know anything about the technology could utilize and try to make some money. That it was certainly on the front end of that wave. Not the first time we'd seen it,
right?
But it wasn't as prolific as it became later.
Because it seems like that picked up pretty quickly in the early 2020s, just as a more popular type of attack. But I know that in like the around 2015 or 2016, usually when you'd hear about ransomware, it'd be something like someone taking over one person's computer and asking for like $100 in Bitcoin. So that seems pretty fascinating that this could have been one of the really early adopters of that strategy.
Well, it must have been. But Adam was talking about this in 2017 already with these ransomware as a service syndicates that were. Taking a piece of the action in exchange for the use of their software.
And I think also the story really we're talking about today shows that criminals don't stick to just one type of scam. And if you guys, as the Secret Service, if you weren't as aware and up on cyber crimes as you were, this investigation could have taken a lot longer. So could you say that because they could follow the trail of this Amazon fraud, they were able to catch the ransomware gang more quickly?
I would say that you nailed it right on the head, and that's what I always try to convey is these two missionaries that we have, really, you know, two different sides of the same coin, and it makes sense for one agency to be doing both this work because the investigations and the protection are mutually supportive in so many ways, and this is a perfect illustration of that, how we would have not been able to be as strong on our protection response if we didn't have the expertise, know-how, and experience on the cyber investigative side of the house.
Which is a good thing. It's a good thing.
I mean, this makes you guys make War Games look like a dumb movie. You really just we're able to funnel down. No, I mean, it's amazing to watch, like, to hear a story that in some ways really mirrors, I guess, in slightly less flashy terms, a lot of the Hollywood movies we see about these investigations. It really does work that way, where you get a tiny little thread and you can follow it all the way to your criminal.
At the end of the day, good investigative work is good investigative work, whether it's physical or cyber. It's gathering all the information, talking to the right people, following the money, and put it in the shoe leather or the pads of your finger to figure things out and to stick with it. And again, I know I say it a lot, but it's so important. And the partnerships, because if we didn't have all the right people as part of our cyber fraud task forces, if we didn't have the relationships overseas and with local police departments, this also would have been really, really difficult to resolve as quickly and as well as we did.
No, and I know that Jen Easterly of CISA has been making it very clear that public-private partnerships are critical internationally in order to get a handle on what is truly a scary situation. Hey, but look, this seems right in line with Secret Service priorities in cybercrime and public education about it, how to recognize potential illegal use of digital assets. So, again, we really appreciate what you guys are doing. And of course, Bo and Travis and I, A, want to thank you for your service. And B, we want to state for the record that none of the messing around with these cameras was done in any way to mask the size of the crowd at the inauguration.
Oh, wait, my camera seems to have just been attacked. They just asked me for $10 to get it back.
I'll take it in Bitcoin, Bo.
Okay.
So, hey, listen, can you tell us a little bit about the public-facing cybersecurity awareness site that the Secret Service has developed?
It provides information. It provides descriptions of how cyber criminals, launder and or cash out illegally gained funds, and give people a place to click if they think that they're seeing, illegal activity going on in cyber world.
Is that secretservice.gov/investigations/digital assets? Or is it something else?
No, that's right.
Okay, it is.
All right, guys.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
You rock, Brian.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
See you guys.
Thanks. Bye.
What can we learn from all this today? What can the non-Secret Service member of the human race take away from our conversation with Brian?
No, me. What? Not him, me.
There's a guy in the corner making chimp noises that I think might want to take this one.
Are you calling me a chimpanzee?
I think that was kind of,
That's different. He's doing his boboon thing.
Borangutan.
I think the takeaway is simple, guys. If you're going to do a ransomware attack, don't have multiple windows open and do a screen grab. Duh.
There is that.
No, but really.
Excellent advice. Now, Travis, on the grown-up side of things, what do you think?
It's true. I'll take it.
All right. Well, I think the main person that's sort of the everyman in this situation is the one in England. The moral of the story, and I think that's one that it's a drum that we beat pretty often, is that you need to be really careful online, that even if something seems perfectly legitimate, I mean, especially if you're buying a smoking gun, that is in and of itself a bit of a red flag. But even if a transaction seems legitimate, there's always the opportunity or potential for a scam. There's always some way that someone online could be trying to get you some in one way or the other. And in this person's case, it ended up being used for trying to disrupt an inauguration.
Well, no, it wasn't, Travis. Yeah. And that's a really important distinction
True.
To make.
Okay.
It was not used to disrupt an inauguration. What I think is also interesting for all those criminals out there listening to our show is that, if you know, you may think you're just doing a simple kind of fraud, but if you end up landing on a police server, for example, around the time of an inauguration, you're committing a much larger crime, which points to the fact that you're always committing a fairly serious crime. And maybe it's time to get a job at McDonald's or something and cut it out.
Do they have McDonald's?
Or at least just try to hack me. No, I'm just saying, like, it's a more reliable paycheck. And these guys are just putting themselves in harm's way, and they're clearly not that bright. So, you know, come at me, bro. Come
it's
at
like,
me.
It's like the unintended consequences of intended consequences that were unintended.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, so kids, if you're thinking of setting up a fake marketplace to buy a smoking gun, to provide a smoking gun to the Secret Service when you interrupt something they're trying to prepare for, you're going to prison.
Okay, but let's roll this back for a second, okay?
Okay.
So our moral of the story, if you're buying something on Amazon, how do you protect yourself? I mean, isn't Amazon supposed to be secure?
I mean, it is by and large fairly secure, but if you're buying from an Amazon affiliate, that might not be secure. And it's something that we run into all the time with supply chain stuff. If you're buying something from Amazon proper, that could be legitimate. If you're buying from a vendor on Amazon, that can also be legitimate. But at the same time, as soon as you start kind of getting a little bit further away from the core services, there's always the opportunity for that to be used in a scam one way or the other.
Yeah. And when you're working with a vendor, you're like one step away from leaving the platform. You're on the platform. It's true. But, you know, so, and when I say Amazon, big box, when I say vendors on Amazon, that's mom and pop, but that's online mom and pop. And online mom and pop shops are not the same as the one that you walk into to buy whatever it is you're looking for. And you just need to be careful, because while most, if not many, many if most, I don't know which way that should go, are legit, there's always going to be Natasha and Boris who are looking to hack into everything known to man.
So what's the best way, guys? And I present this to the two of you. The best way that you know that a vendor is really a vendor.
Well, if you don't want remorse,
go to the source.
What does that mean in this case? Go to Amazon, I guess. I mean, much as that pains me to say it. You guys really sounded enthusiastic there. Let me do it again.
All right.
If you don't want remorse,
go to the source.
Okay.
Listen, thanks everybody. We really appreciate you listening. And on your way off this experience, it would be really great.
This experience. On your way from back to reality.
As you return to the real world.
Adam, you just hold it for a second. Travis, is this guy going to talk about reviews again?
I think he might, because we've had something of a milestone on Apple Podcasts.
Well, you know, there's someone named Katie in our orbit who had the idea that maybe people would review more if they heard what a good review sounds like. Now, do you think you can do better than this? Fireside Chats about all things cyber. This happened on Sunday from Toro Maya. Sorry, Toro Maya, if it's Toro Maja. I really love this podcast. I work in retail, which can be unforgiving sometimes. So after work, I just need someone to let me know about crazy scams so that I can focus on something completely different from crazy people at work. Anyway, I'm going to continue. And they very much keep me grounded and informed. We keep someone grounded and informed. Grounded.
We're not.
Yeah. As well as just either laughing or groaning. Groaning, I can understand, at a ha-ha just gone wrong. Yeah. Hey, did you hear that? A ha-ha just gone wrong?
I did, as a matter of fact. Ooh,
we've never had a ha-ha go wrong. I don't know about you, Toro Maya. I'm talking about them as if I'm talking about therapy, and I do think of them as such. We're therapists! Okay, I'll be sending around the gold ingots for your services, gentlemen. Winky emoji. Now, I don't think that you can beat that, but if you can, Adam is going to send you a Ford F-150 Lightning. And when he does, I want you to send it to my house because I'm really hoping to get one, and they're backordered by 2 years. So.
Wait, Bo, let's be honest. Did you not just get a tractor?
I know, I'm moving on. So moving right along.
That was your birthday tractor.
I got a tractor, so now I need a truck. So never mind. You know, Mr. Ingratitude here. If you can write a better review, I will personally assure you that Adam Levin will give you an F-150 Lightning truck. Right, Adam?
One that I go to the toy store and buy. It will be a perfect replica of your dream F-150 Lightning truck.
Hey, you know what? And I actually think that's a better offer because the real ones are backordered by 2 years or three. So we'll send you a toy F-150 Lightning if you claim responsibility for your review via email, which you can do, also a Katie idea, on What the Hack or AdamLevin.com, on the Loudtree Media What the Hack channel or AdamLevin.com, where you can find a link that lets you tell your story to us.
Sure. If you have a story, especially one about getting hacked, scammed, or otherwise bamboozled, please come to AdamLevin.com and get in touch with us. We may even have you on the show.
What the Hack with Adam Levin is a production of Loudtree Media.
It's produced by Andrew Steven, the man with two first names.
You can find us online at loudtreemedia.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.